Welcome to episode 158 of the Fertility Podcast. Just a quick intro from me because I've got a big episode ahead of me from a lovely lady who shared her story and the book that she is putting together. If you've just found this podcast, welcome. Welcome to the Fertility Podcast. I've been dropping leaflets around GP surgeries. So if that's how you found the podcast, amazing. I hope you'll have a look around the different episodes, have a listen through to some of them and find out some useful stuff because I speak to experts as well as people sharing their stories. And my mission is to ultimately help you feel less alone, hopefully help deal with some of the overwhelm that you might be feeling trying to navigate your way through your infertility if you've been given a diagnosis. If you haven't and you're just wondering why it's taking so long and trying to, I don't know, suss out what could be going on, then there's a search box at the fertilitypodcast.com website where you can chuck in some things rather than doing it on Google, and episodes will pop up that hopefully will help. I'm now going to welcome Katie Linderman Thornton, who I met at Fertility Fest in London in May 2018, which I will refer you back to all that content at the end of this episode. Katie's created a new website called the Uber Barons Club, which, as she's just beautifully described to me, is a community of women across the internet who have challenging journeys. Well, she's kind of giving them a voice. Katie, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks, Natalie. Thanks for having me. I've been a huge fan of the podcast, so it's an honour to be speaking to you.
Oh, well, you're too kind. Well, we met and we've been in touch since we met about speaking, and I've been watching what you're doing. And what we're going to talk about is Katie's own experience and why she's now doing what she's doing. She's writing lots for kind of national newspapers as well as her blog, and really highlighting for you, if you haven't yet found your tribe, because I've talked about Instagram, I've talked about other places that you can find people that we want you to know you're not alone by finding these people. Katie's bringing a whole new dimension that you might not have even realized. So first of all, you've talked about how you have caused a leading fertility consultant to say that they are stumped, and they're not usually stumped when they were trying to get their head around your situation. So let's talk about your situation and what's happened with you.
Yeah, absolutely. It's an interesting one. In your podcast, there's been lots of talk around people saying things that they wish they'd done and whether they checked their fertility out when they were younger. And I actually sort of in some ways did everything right. When I was younger, I thought, you know what, I don't think my periods have ever been quite right. I think there might be an issue and I'd like to know if there's an issue earlier on. And so I came off the pill, and when I was 20, I went and got myself checked out. I had a fertility MOT to look at my ovarian reserve so that I could see, well, we're not really ready to start trying, but if there's an issue, I'd like to know about it, and do I freeze my eggs or what's the deal? And we discovered that my instincts were right, that the reason I didn't have proper periods was that I have polycystic ovary syndrome. But it also suggested that my ovarian reserve was fantastic. So the biological clock wasn't ticking at an accelerated rate, but we knew that there was an issue and it was likely that I would need some fertility treatment, because obviously if you don't ovulate, that makes it very difficult to conceive without a little bit of help. So I went to see a gynecologist well before we were actually starting to try, to understand what might the pathway be, because obviously on the NHS you have to try for a year before they'll even see you. But if you know that there's an issue and you know that you don't ovulate, you can try for a year and never have had a chance at ever getting pregnant. So we knew that the pathway would be, okay, so when you're ready to start trying, come in and see, and we can look into doing Clomid for very basic ovulation induction. I was always aware that there was an issue. I never went into trying to conceive thinking that, oh, it's going to be a breeze. And I was aware that, you know, if it doesn't, if we haven't conceived within six cycles of Clomid, that the next stage is likely to be IVF. What I wasn't prepared for was the roller coaster ride of issues that we couldn't possibly have predicted. When I went along and we decided, you know, we'd got married and we were ready to start trying, went along to see the gynecologist coming off the pill, and it's okay, let's just double check before we start. And we were quite shocked to find that my polycystic ovaries had gone, in the sense that all my eggs appeared to have gone. The way that your ovarian reserve is that you want to see lots of follicles, which shows lots of eggs. And I'd gone from having lots and lots and lots of eggs, which is what polycystic ovaries is, lots of follicles, to having five. So looking at a very, very almost perimenopausal number of eggs. And then when we did my bloods, it was horrific.
In what time frame are we talking from when you first thought it was a PCOS diagnosis to then having this next shock?
Just 5 years. So right. It was between the ages of 28 and 33. So it should not have been that accelerated in that short space of time. Polycystic ovaries is not supposed to just disappear. Clearly, as you age, your ovarian reserve declines. However, doctors were very, they're like, I don't know what's going on, because you certainly, it's not supposed to happen in that short space of time, and certainly not between the ages of 28 and 33. And my bloods and the scans were pretty catastrophic. The levels were in there. You are hurtling towards premature ovarian failure. This is very, very bad.
And at this point in time, obviously, you've already established that there's some issues, and now there's this new revelation. Are you being offered support to get your head around all of this, the pair of you? Were you talking about it elsewhere? Are you looking elsewhere?
Yeah, I mean, I have to say, we were incredibly lucky in that we never had the, oh, what clinic are we going to go to? I'd found a gynecologist who is a fertility specialist, and what really mattered to me and was incredibly valuable was that he is an independent consultant. And so all of my treatment from diagnosis through to my IVF and actually beyond was with one individual doctor.
Amazing.
And he works as a satellite clinic. So my egg collection and my embryo transfers, when we eventually did IVF, was with Care London, but everything was with him. So I saw one clinician, he did all my scans, every appointment was with him. He did my egg collection, every embryo transfer, he did my surgeries. So from a clinical point of view, we got very good emotional care from the clinician and that continuity of care, which really mattered. And then for me, the immediate place was that I started off in forums online, in fertility forums. So this is 3-4 years ago. And a lot of that is finding the places that feel right for you. So although I'd started off in what I thought was the polycystic ovary syndrome forums with other PCOS people, I very quickly went, oh my gosh, I'm in the world of diminished ovarian reserve, and I'm in the world of, we're doing IVF within 3 months of starting to try, because we were in a situation of going, if your ovarian reserve has declined this fast, we don't really have time. So then I was in the world of speaking to other people with DOR, diminished ovarian reserve, and understanding what goes with all of that. What does that mean? What are the things I can do? Are there supplements I can take? What are the questions I should be asking? What kind of protocols does that mean? What is all the stuff that is around that? So I could really feel informed and equipped to go into treatment, being able to be as strong an advocate for ourselves as we could.
And were you surprised at the number of other women who were going through what you were going through?
I think it was, in the sense that, you know that lots of people have infertility, but when you go into it, you don't really necessarily know all of the different kinds. So when you go into a forum, Fertility Friends is a dedicated forum for infertility issues. And the amount of different sections for different diagnoses and different specific areas and conditions is phenomenal, because it means that actually you can find people who are in your specific area. And that was terrific, because if you're going through a situation where you want to understand other people in that specific boat, that was amazing. And so you were going through support through treatment with other people, and there was, you were going through your journeys together with people who were going through the same thing. And that was incredibly important.
Because one of the things that I wanted to talk with you about was what you'd found out on Mumsnet, which was a point that you raised during one of the conversations at Fertility Fest where Mumsnet was being discussed. Because you actually found a community there when most people might assume in the infertility world that they'd stay far away from Mumsnet.
Absolutely. And I have to say that I have made some dear friends, real life friends, through Mumsnet. Mumsnet, actually, I'm not sure of the statistics, but it's actually, I believe, one of the largest social networks, forums, communities within the UK. And so actually lots of the forums in the areas are actually not just for mums. There are, amazingly, I didn't realise, lots and lots of people who are child-free by choice, as well as people such as myself who joined to be part of the trying to conceive community. So there's different forums. You sort of go in the TTC bit, which is around conception. And then when you know it's getting more difficult, it's when you graduate to the infertility boards where it's other people who, where it's not just about maybe using ovulation sticks and trying to have sex at the right time. It's when you're getting into the, okay, we're actually having treatment and people going through IVF and it's not so optimistic, but we're in a more challenging situation. And I found phenomenal groups. And again, there's sort of, there's different threads for cycle buddies. So if you're cycling at the same time, you can find other people who you're going through that particular IVF cycle with. But then there's also threads for more general things. So there was one which was around, okay, if you've been trying for 18 months or more, here's one for you. They were fantastic because again, you're with other people who are in a similar boat to you, and the amount that you can learn from each other, as well as having support for both Fertility Friends and Mumsnet, being able to understand questions that you should ask and what are people's tips and tricks. So as well as that emotional support of understanding people like you who are in a similar boat, actually some of the advice, and I really found that was a tremendous help to me. And for me, what really helped me throughout the journey was being able to support other people, because when you have accumulated quite a lot of knowledge around these issues, being able to share that with other people is immensely rewarding.
Now, in the way you've written about your story, you talk about how doctors on both sides of the Atlantic confirmed that your womb could not sustain a pregnancy, which was unfortunately the outcome that you reached. First of all, am I right to assume that you then travelled for more investigations?
Slightly. So the issue that we started off was we thought the problem was with my eggs. And so I had my first IVF cycle and responded very poorly. I responded like somebody with severely diminished ovarian reserve. And then things got kind of weird. So with my second cycle, I responded very peculiarly, in that somebody with diminished ovarian reserve is not supposed to get 17 eggs. So that's when, from having gone, we're really stumped, as in where have all your eggs gone, to go, how are you getting so many eggs? There's something really strange going on. And I got pregnant off that cycle, and we saw a heartbeat, and you know, things were developing well. And then very sadly, after having seen the heartbeat twice at 10 weeks, that we saw that the baby had died. I'd suffered a miscarriage. When we got the testing results back, because we were very fortunate to have private medical insurance, although Bupa doesn't cover anything to do with fertility or pregnancy, they do cover miscarriages, which is worth knowing, because I certainly didn't know that. So if people have insurance, perhaps with work, it was mean that I was able to get my ERPC surgery done very quickly, which was fantastic. It really helped a difficult situation. And we were able to then pay to have the remains tested, which means you can identify much more quickly, was there a problem with the baby, or is there potentially a problem with me? On the NHS, you can't do that until you've had three successive miscarriages, which when you're going through IVF is very difficult, because obviously it's not just a case of going back and trying again. Yeah. And we knew that the problem was me, and we knew that there had been some issues, that my womb lining, you want when you have a transfer to have a nice, thick, juicy womb lining that an embryo can snuggle into. And it had been a challenge. We didn't know if I was going to be able to have a transfer because my lining had been tricky. It wasn't thickening up. So we suspected, is there an issue with this? What became very strange was that once we knew that the problem was not with the embryo, the problem was me, I was very keen to be able to do another round and to try and do the pre-implantation genetic screening, which I know you've covered on previous podcasts where you've talked to embryologists and about other advances in technology. Yeah. And I know the jury is out on this, but for us, it felt like a really important thing to do, because for us, it was a diagnostic measure. I wanted to be able to understand if we were putting an embryo back, we wanted to be able to understand if the cycle failed or it miscarried again, knowing that we thought that there seemed to be an issue potentially with my womb lining. Was the issue in us, if it failed or miscarried again, the seed, as in the embryo, or the soil, as in me? If we put back an untested embryo, we wouldn't know whether the problem was with the seed or the soil. So we elected to do another cycle to be able to do the PGS. And it was very weird because we found that my PCOS was back completely. And from having responded like a person with very diminished ovarian reserve, I had to use a very tiny dose of medications and got a phenomenal 28 eggs, and I was at the risk of ovarian hyperstimulation syndrome, which did give us the opportunity of getting lots of embryos to be able to test. So that's the other thing about PGS, is that it isn't for everyone. It doesn't improve the quality of your embryos, but it is a selection tool. So if you have a lot of embryos, it enables you to identify which are the ones that are have the potential to make a baby and which aren't. And so for us, it was really valuable.
You were being so proactive with these different decisions and tests that you were having done. Was this from information you were getting from the forums that you were reading stuff in, or were you having lengthy conversations, asking lots of questions to your consultant to, I mean, obviously you want to try everything to, you know, get the outcome. Was the guidance coming from stuff you'd found or from the clinic?
Both. I was very lucky that my consultant was you know, we were able to spend time. That was probably the really important thing of being with an independent consultant, that I had time just with him. Yeah. I wasn't seeing nurses and sonographers and different people every time. So we were able, he knew my case and we were able to discuss the different options and really getting personalized care. But really, it came from going online, going in support groups, pointing in the direction of, oh, somebody did this, or what about this treatment, or this is what we found. And it was what that enabled me to do, was come with the right questions. So it wasn't telling me what to do, but it was letting me become much more informed to be able to come with, I used to jokingly call it the notebook of doom, because we would come in and I'd have this notebook full of questions. And that, I think, enabled me to have more productive conversations. And it was important to be proactive. And that helped me, because it meant me, it enabled me to feel that we were doing everything that we could. And as you know, and as your listeners know, you feel incredibly powerless, because you are incredibly powerless to some degree, because ultimately, when it comes down to it, it's going to work down to two things: science and nature. Yeah. Science comes down to what the doctors and the clinics can do, and nature we have no control over. And a lot of the stuff that we do around our lifestyle and our vitamins and all these kind of things, it's tinkering around the edges. And the main value of it for me was around feeling a sense of agency, a feeling like I feel like I'm trying to do something. But really, it for me, the most valuable thing was around doing this research, learning from other people in similar boats, and being able to come with the right questions. And for me, that was hugely valuable.
And you talked about there being these secret Facebook groups that you weren't sure whether people were aware of. I mean, there's a lot out there online. Are there certain ones that, you know, you felt were really accurate and helpful, or was it just, you know, finding things in different places?
There's kind of a difference with Facebook. There'll be some that are closed that you can find if you search. So if you put in IVF or fertility, chances are lots and lots of groups will come up. Sure. And there are some that are literally secret. They're hidden and you need somebody to invite you, because lots of people don't want somebody to see that they're a member of a particular group, because Facebook's very personal. Obviously, it's your real name. Often what happened was, in some of these forums where you're doing it under a username, you don't know people's names. So you know all these different people's stories, you know all the ins and outs of them, but you don't necessarily know their real names. And so what happens quite a lot is you quite often have sort of spin-off groups of people will take people who you've been on a particular thread or a forum, and you'll move it to a private Facebook group. But equally, there'll be things on a particular thread. So on a PGS forum group and threads, somebody mentioned that there's a Facebook group for PGS, which they then said, oh, if you give me your Facebook, I can invite you to. Similarly, there were groups around immune issues. So if you're reproductive immunology issues, so if that's a concern, there's ones around that. And for me, that was around learning. There was a group for people with Asherman syndrome, which is an issue to do with scarring in the womb lining. My womb lining issue wasn't due to Asherman syndrome, but it has a lot of advice from people with similar issues. So these were all fantastic resources, again, to speak to people in similar situations. There are lots of general ones, which are perhaps more a bit like kind of the communities that you do get in Instagram, where it's a bit more general. It's IVF and lots of support with much more general. But for me, what I found incredibly valuable was groups that were very much around the specific issues, because there was tremendous knowledge and there was tremendous understanding People understand the shorthand and you don't have to kind of go back from the beginning and start again.
Well, we'll make sure that your details obviously are on the show notes and people can contact you if they want to ask more. I don't want to like put the names of those secret groups out for the whole point of them being secret.
No, gladly.
But just going back to that point you'd made about doctors on both sides of the Atlantic confirming your ultimate diagnosis. So because obviously the podcast is listened to internationally, did that mean that there was more cases that were similar to you abroad or what happened?
No, so I saw a number of different clinicians in the UK for second opinions. Really, by the time I saw speaking to other clinicians, we were pretty certain that we'd reached the end of the road in terms of having tried numbers of different experimental treatments with my doctor. But I had some Skype consultations with doctors in the US, and they essentially confirmed, you know, when I went through, you know, sent through all my notes and my history and all the different tests and surgeries that I had done and all of the different history of all the different treatments I had done, they said, you know what, you really have tried everything. From everything we can tell, if you were coming and sitting in my consulting room, there isn't anything that I would suggest to you that you haven't already done. I was coming to them at a point where, as far as we understood, it seemed pretty clear that we were hurtling towards the end of the road, and that with my body, that my womb was not up to the job of sustaining a pregnancy, and that if we wanted to turn any of our frozen embryos into a person, the likely option seemed to be surrogacy. And what we wanted to do was to be able to speak to the experts to see, essentially have that validated, to understand, is there anything we haven't tried, or is this really the end of the road with my body? And the doctors that I spoke to in the US via Skype consultations said yes. I went to Coventry, part of the Tommy's Research Centre, Clinical Research Centre in Coventry. There's a clinic who specialise in the role of womb lining in infertility and miscarriage. The lots of the literature that's been written about the role of womb lining in infertility and miscarriage. And if you see in the newspapers, quite a lot of times when there's research about recurrent miscarriage, quite a lot of it will have come out of the Coventry Clinic and will have been written by these two professors. And I went to see Professor Brosens, who's the very eminent professor who leads the research into this at the Coventry Clinic. And I said to him, I said, let me be very clear. I'm coming here not expecting solutions. As far as I'm aware, from everyone I've spoken to, we have exhausted our options. I want to be able to hear it from the top guy to say, yes, you have exhausted your options, so that we really knew we'd left no stone unturned. And he said, Miss Lindemann, he said, most of the people who come through my clinic are medically boring. He said, but you are unequivocally the weirdest case I've ever had. I have never seen what happens in your womb in humans, only in mice.
Oh, my God.
My husband got quite frustrated and really quite angry when I was introduced to his colleague to do a biopsy test, where he said, this is Miss Lindemann, she's like a mouse, because he felt that was really dehumanizing. And to be brutally honest, I didn't even notice, really, because I was so used to feeling like a lab rat that it really didn't even clock it. But it's only in retrospect you go, really, I'm not just a body, I'm someone that's hurting deeply. I've lost babies. And you feel that it's your fault. I know it's not my fault, but I feel like my body let the babies down. It's my body. My body should be able to look after these embryos. My body, it was my job to look after our babies, and I couldn't do that. So it's, as much as I can pragmatically say, I thought it was the end of the road, and I know that I was there to if we close the book, to put it back on the shelf, it still hurts. Miss Lindemann, he said, most of the people who come through my clinic are medically boring. He said, but you are unequivocally the weirdest case I've ever had. I have never seen what happens in your womb in humans, only in mice.
Oh, my God.
My husband got quite frustrated and really quite angry when I was introduced to his colleague to do a biopsy test, where he said, this is Miss Lindemann, she's like a mouse, because he felt that was really dehumanizing. And to be brutally honest, I didn't even notice, really, because I was so used to feeling like a lab rat that it really didn't even even clock it, but it's only in retrospect you go, really, I'm not just a body, I'm someone that's hurting deeply. I've lost babies, and you feel that it's your fault. I know it's not my fault, but I feel like my body let the babies down. It's my body should be able to look after these embryos. My body, it was my job to look after our babies, and I couldn't do that. So it's, as much as I can pragmatically say, I thought it was the end of the road, and I know that I was there to if we close the book, to put it back on the shelf, it still hurts.
Now, you've written about the lack of emotional care in a recent blog, and I know it's a really important issue for so many of us going through this, in how we're spoken to and how we're dealt with when we're going through these different stages. And you made a great point about how clinics, they genuinely believe, this is related to stress that we're going to talk more about, but how they would make this emotional care so much more of a priority than it currently being more of an afterthought. At that point, were you getting the support, or were you finding it yourself?
Bit of both. I felt phenomenally supported by my consultant. He was amazing. He opened up the clinic on a Sunday, the morning after he'd come back from holiday, because he wanted to scan me, because, you know, he really wanted to make sure that we were getting the best care. He saw me after hours, after clinic, when I was panicking about something. He called me from holiday with test results. So, and he spent time talking about it emotionally, because, as he said, you know, he says, it's not just medicine. This is people's hopes and dreams. So I felt very well supported emotionally from that clinical point of view. I also, I started seeing a bereavement counsellor a couple of years ago after I lost my mum. So although I didn't speak to a specialist fertility counsellor, I was going for counselling, because it is a bereavement. And I'd been seeing this guy for a while, and he knew me and my story. But I found that utterly invaluable, because it was a safe space to be able to download and to process. And it is a bereavement. And I can quite honestly say that, hand on heart, that going through the loss of my mum, it was devastating. I held her hand when she died, but there was a certainty about it. It is part of the natural order of things. We live, we will die, and we are ultimately going to bury our parents. Now, obviously, it was devastating. She was taken from us too soon, but I could accept it. There was a certainty she wasn't coming back. With infertility, it is this never-ending cycle of hope and hopelessness, and it's very difficult to move on, particularly when everybody wants to tell you about their cousins, sisters, neighbours, best friends, hairdresser, you know, who've been trying for 17 years and had 300 cycles of IVF, and they stopped trying and went on holiday and went on the adoption list and relaxed and got drunk and stopped thinking about trying. And, oh my God, they have natural quadruplets. Never give up, never stop hope. And so it's really difficult. And certainly it isn't the natural order of things. You feel that I am supposed to be able to do this, and I can't. And I'm grieving for a future that I'd imagined, that I'd hoped for. And so it is a bereavement. It is a grief. And I would urge people to get counselling. And it is an HFEA requirement that clinics have to make available and offer counselling to all their patients. They are not obliged to make it free of charge, but it is a requirement that they need to make patients aware of it and to make it accessible. I highly, from what I understand, very few clinics do. But it's something that people should be aware of, and they should ask their clinic about it. I didn't use the counsellor at my clinic. I had someone I was already seeing, but I can strongly recommend counselling, both as a couple and as individuals. And for me, finding my tribe, I would not be here now if it wasn't for the people who supported me throughout this journey, who were there for me.
I just want to pick up on what Katie just mentioned about the grief counselling, because a previous episode that I've shared is with a grief counsellor, with the focus on the World Child Loss Week that was mid-September. So I'll put that link in the show notes for you to refer back to. And obviously, if you're listening to this podcast outside of the UK, it still stands to ask your clinic about the access that you have to emotional support, because it should be something worldwide that is a given when you're on this journey, that you can find the support. And the tribe aspect is so vital, and as you can hear from how Katie's been talking so far, we could talk for quite a lot longer, but I want to actually hone in on your book. I wanted to talk to you about some other things, but what I'm going to do is put links to Katie's blogs, which she's talked about things that will be relevant to you, like things other people say and dealing with the whole emotional distress and the stress that comes with infertility, on the show notes. Let's talk about your book, the project that you're working on, the reason that you've created the Uber Baron Club website, and what you're hoping to achieve, because you write brilliantly, you speak so eloquently. There's a sad and true and honest and real side to what you're saying that is so vital to get out there, because there is so much success stories when it comes to fertility treatment. And the point of this podcast, if you've just found it, is to show you all the different faces, sadly, of infertility. So we're going to rejoin Katie in a moment and find out more about the book project that she's got going on after we hear a quick note from my sponsors. If you're looking for a supplement to take whilst trying to conceive, Pregnacare Conception and Wellman Conception provide advanced nutritional support. They include zinc, vitamin D, and the exact levels of folic acid recommended for women by the UK Department of Health. Pregnacare is expert nutritional care while trying for a baby. And to find out more, visit thefertilitypodcast.com/shop. Now, I know how daunting it is finding out information about fertility issues, so I wanted to tell you about The Fertility Show. It's on the 3rd and 4th of November at Olympia in London, and is open to anyone struggling with fertility issues or wanting to start a family. You can meet experts face-to-face, attend the brilliant seminars by leading fertility specialists, and get your questions answered at the Let's Talk Fertility stage. Visit thefertilityshow.co.uk for more information. So, Katie, the book is about this hidden community of women, isn't it?
Yes, it is. So we know that in the UK, it's 1 in 6 couples. I believe in the US, it may be 1 in 8. But we know that it's very common for couples to experience infertility. But amongst them are those whose journeys can be longer and more challenging and more unsuccessful than others. And there is this hidden community of women supporting each other through these journeys that's full of incredible wit and humour and kindness. And these amazing, heartbreaking and inspirational stories. But these stories don't get told because everybody only wants to hear about the success stories. And so much of the narrative around infertility and pregnancy loss is, and rightfully, stories of hope and staying positive and how it'll all be worth it when you have your baby in your arms. And certainly when I was going through treatment, there were lots and lots of books with advice about starting IVF. And there were some books sharing personal experiences of infertility. You know, there were some memoirs. But the vast majority had the obligatory happy ending. And if you read anything in the paper, you know, you can't, or on TV, when people talk about my IVF struggle, it's almost always when they've been successful and they have their baby. And it's, and here's the miracle baby. And when I was, you know, going through the real difficulties and recognising that, you know what, this may very well not work. This may very well not have a happy ending. I didn't necessarily want endless inspirational positivity. I wanted to read a book with real women's stories that actually acknowledged the ugly, distressing truth, that acknowledged that everything that I was feeling when I didn't feel positive and I felt angry and frustrated and bitter, I wanted to feel that I wasn't alone. And so I decided to try and write one. Because so many women in these communities and in these groups said the same thing. They said that I felt really quite angry that I could, you know, people who were getting towards the end, you know, looking that there might be an end of their journey that isn't the one that they'd hoped for. They wanted to have recognition that infertility and pregnancy loss can be deeply traumatic, desperately unfair, and utterly unrelating. And really importantly, we wanted to read a book with stories from women whose journeys didn't all end with a baby. wanted to read a book that would reassure us that eventually we would be okay, even if things didn't turn out how we'd hoped. And I wanted to read a book that would help me feel like I wasn't alone. So I decided I wanted to try and write one.
Good on you. And how's it going?
So I'm at the very early stages. I started a questionnaire to enable people to share their stories so that I could understand what were the emotional experiences, what were people most interested in, what were the dynamics and the dimensions of people's stories, and is this something that people were willing to share? Because if this was not just about my story, but about lots of women's stories and these universal emotions that people have through the lens of infertility and pregnancy loss. So, as I mentioned, grief, guilt, failure, anger, isolation, and crucially, survival. Were people willing to share their stories? And so I put the website up and the questionnaire up, and I've been overwhelmed. I've had over 200 responses in, I think it's been up for 6-8 weeks. And I also asked, I said, in this questionnaire, does this sound like something you'd read? What difference do you think it would have made to your journey if you'd been able to read something like this? And why have you contributed? And I've been utterly overwhelmed, and it's been incredibly inspiring and moving. The depth and the stories and the heartbreak and the humour that people have shared. And the kind of the key thing that I've taken out of it is that the number one thing is that the reason people say I would like to read a book that sounds like this, and the reason I've contributed, is because it would help me feel less alone. Which I know is why you do this podcast. It's why any of us do, you know, speak about these and why these communities exist. It's because we want to raise awareness, but people wanted to understand that actually when you're not necessarily feeling positive and you want the acknowledgement of the difficulties and the trauma and that you're feeling bitter and guilty and all the nastiness around it, as well as hope that if it doesn't work out, you will be okay. That was something that, you know, getting that feedback has been incredibly valuable. And the reason that people have said that they wanted to contribute is because they wanted to help other people feel less alone. And actually what some people said, quite a lot of people said, in fact, was that they said, you know what, I would have loved to be able to give a book like this to my friends and family to allow them to understand what it's really like and how difficult it is. And if I'm withdrawing from you, or if I can't feel like I can't be around friends with family with babies, or if I'm isolating and withdrawing, and if I'm, you know, if I'm being difficult and emotional, this is why. This is actually the truth of what it's like on the inside, and that it is a trauma, and that it is a grief, and that it's unrecognized. And so that's the goal. And so where I am is that I'm trying to write this book proposal, and I'm urging the more and more people who are willing to share their stories. I really want to represent as many different voices as possible. And so what that means is I really would love to hear from anyone who has experienced infertility or pregnancy loss, wherever you are in your journey, whether your journey is current or past, or has been successful or not. It's about understanding the emotional experience that you have had or are having throughout that journey. And so wherever you are, including if you have been successful, because the journey has still been, your journey is just as valid as anything else. And actually, some of the emotions around guilt and grief and so on still are there, as you will know, having had successful treatment. The survivor's guilt and the incidence of postnatal depression being higher amongst people who've experienced infertility and pregnancy loss. And so I really want to represent as many different perspectives as possible. And that does also include men. So there is a questionnaire specifically for the guys, because although it's women's stories, infertility and pregnancy loss is something we experience as couples. So I really want to represent that perspective. So there is a questionnaire for the guys too. I've been overwhelmed by the responses I've had from guys. So if you're listening, if you're male or female, I would love to hear from you. And if you're female, please encourage your partners to contribute. The more the better, because the more varied experiences, the more stories, the more I hope that we can give us a voice.
And I'm really hoping that by putting this out, with the podcast being listened to in over 50 countries, that you can get a really worldwide
view on this, because I'm very aware that with being in the UK, you know, often my content is UK focused, but with the power of the internet and this being such a worldwide issue, we want to hear from you. So I'll put the details of Katie's questionnaire on the show notes, and as she said, do go for it, fill it in, share it with people. I mean, it's great that this kind of book is being compiled. I had spoken with Leslie Pine and Yvonne John, who had written their stories from the childless, not by choice community, talking about life once you've reached that point. But I'm really interested as well in how this is your current journey and what you're going through currently, because I think, like we've just been talking about, every step of the way, the heartache and the torment isn't really understood by society. And the only way it can be is by having these conversations and by putting this literally down on paper. So I really hope that you get a broad response. How long are you going to keep the questionnaire open? I mean, we're speaking end of September.
Well, I say indefinitely, in the sense that I'm putting together a book proposal, and I hope that, you know, I hope that I'll be able to persuade a publisher to pick it up, and then hopefully we'll be writing the book. So at the moment, there isn't a cutoff, so please continue. I'm not sure how long this book will take, so and I don't anticipate it being a quick and easy thing. No. So the more, the sooner.
If you've already had the 200 responses, it sounds like there's going to be a lot, and a lot that you want to go through, and a lot that you want to then share.
Absolutely, and I think absolutely you've hit the nail on the head in terms of worldwide, and I really want to represent the different variety of perspectives. And one of the things that's been really interesting is quite a few responses have expressed the different cultural norms around infertility. So different cultures, and I know this is something you touched on when in your podcast with Yvonne John, around the way that different cultures attitudes to infertility and the whole dimension that has. So representing from different cultures, religions, communities, because that adds a whole other dimension, and that isn't something that tends to get explored, or certainly that lots of people say they haven't encountered. So I'd be really, really keen to hear from, well, as many different people as possible, and I really want to kind of represent that breadth of experience.
Well, what we'll do is we'll give you a couple of months to gather more, and then we will speak again as you're working through all the responses, and we can talk more about some of those different cultural perspectives, because I think that that's a really essential thing that I want to explore more. And I urge you again to check out the show notes for this podcast, and all of Katie's details will be there, and read her blogs, because I'm sure they will resonate with you. If anything that Katie said about where she's at and what she's gone through has already, then her writing will continue to do that. And I feel really privileged, you know, to get this perspective from you, because with what I do with the podcast, my experience was quite straightforward, even though I had my own emotional journey with what was going on. From the extent that, you know, you've been through, and a lot of the people that I speak to, I'm always kind of humbled to be able to share it.
Thank you so much for having me. It's been an honour. Thank you so much.
Oh, it's been a pleasure. And the show notes for this episode are thefertilitypodcast.com/Katie, which is K-A-T-Y. Do go and have a look. There's lots of information there about the different groups that Katie mentioned, about how you can follow her work and follow her on social media, and of course, fill in the questionnaire that we spoke about. If there's any questions raised from this podcast that you'd like to ask me, just email Natalie at thefertilitypodcast.com, or do come and join my closed Facebook group called Talk Fertility. And on Insta and Twitter, I'm at FertilityPoddy, and it will be awesome to hear from you. Thank you, as always, for your support, and until the next time.